They never saw Israeli soldiers in Damascus, Aleppo, or Homs, but they saw Iranian militias with heavy weapons killing them. My guest that I'm going to be having on the show today is a Syrian Arab woman who fled Syria during the Civil War, made her way to the United States. Today, she's a journalist who reports from Washington, D.C. for Arabic news outlets. And she's going to be coming on the show talking today about the change in the region of the Middle East. You know, the world is kind of like a chessboard, and you've got different players, different kings and queens, and different troops all attacking each other. And the board changes. Iran has grown to be a regional power that threatens the existence of neighboring Islamic states. I have to say, though, here that Iran is more Shia or Shiite, and the more west you go, they turn more Sunni. There is animosity with Iran. They want to take over the region. They want to return their great. They want to return to their great Persian Empire, and they're a threat. And with a strong president of the United States under Donald Trump, and him able to guarantee their support to these Arab states and to make peace with another regional power in the Middle East, which is Israel, they obviously believe that it's better for them to throw their hat in with the United States and Israel, both very strong, superior military entities, and fight off their enemy, Iran. So Iran has been making a lot of waves here in the Middle East. A lot of the Arab population hates Iran, fears Iran, and has seen the damage that Iran has done. So we're going to be talking about this on the show today, as well as other changes in the Middle East. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Tamar Yonah Show here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. All right, we are back here at the Tamar Yonah Show on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com, and we're taking a look now at the new reality here in the Middle East. Much has changed on this chessboard with the players and the power pieces, and you've got Iran, who is threatening the existence of other Arab countries around it. You have Israel, which has always been put off to the side with the Islamic Arab countries not wanting to have peace with her. And then you had Donald Trump 4 years ago that got elected to the White House, and things changed there as well. So we're going to be speaking now with somebody who used to live in Syria. She's a Syrian Arab woman who had to flee her country, her home, during the Civil War. And that was also a direct result of Barack Hussein Obama's leadership when the Arab Spring came out, and disaster in many places in the Middle East with countries falling, lots of death and violence. And our guest says that they never saw Israeli soldiers in Damascus, Aleppo, or Homs, but they saw Iranian militias with heavy weapons killing them. And so things have now changed in the Middle East, and people who, or countries that may have not wanted to speak with Israel or have any relations with Israel at all, are now open to having peace with Israel, seeing that it's a regional power here also, And it could help them when we come together to fight against the Iranian terrorism and Iranian desire to take over the region. So here talking to us now, we have joining us Hadil Weiss. Again, she is from Syria. She lives today in Washington, D.C., and she reports for Arabic news outlets. Welcome to the show, Hadil Weiss.
Thank you for having me, Tamar. Thank you.
I am thrilled. I've been looking forward to having you on. And so give us an idea. What has changed in the Arab region that now even some people in Syria are saying Israel maybe isn't that bad?
Yes. So one of the big changes that took place in the Arab world in the last, let's say, decade is the place where I came from, Syria, and the very horrible war that took place in Syria. A lot of horrible things happened in Syria. Even chemical weapons were used from the regime against the people. Thousands and thousands of people died in Syria. We saw a very big conflict, a big civil war. And when the people look at this civil war and all these casualties and all this sadness during this war, they see that this was like made by other Syrians and other local people. One of the hugest miseries in the modern history of the region happened not because of Israel, not because of all this conflict that we heard about for years and years. It happened because of dictatorship, because of Assad regime, because of Islamist groups who also behaved later worse than Assad regime. They pretended to be his opposition, and they killed more and more people. So when Syrians start to ask themselves who is the enemy, it's obviously not Israel. The same happened in other Arab nations. Maybe the situation is a little bit different in other Arab countries like United Arab Emirates and Bahrain, who made even a broader peace deals recently with Israel. But it's the same. Those Arab countries also, they have been seeing Iran plotting against them, targeting their lands with missiles, using militias, the Houthis and Hezbollah, to target them with missiles. And meanwhile, Israel is facing almost the same challenge, the same two challenges: extremism from Islamist groups and the behavior of the Iranian regime. So people are saying, like, why not? And in the first place, all this hostility in the region against Israel was made by dictatorship and regimes, and it was used to put the blame on Israel and everything. Like, let's say if in Syria we don't have electricity, we don't have enough resources, they would tell us it's because of Israel, it's not because of the failed regime. So things has changed a lot.
So when you say that they don't have electricity in Syria, what do you mean?
Yeah, I mean, like, if you don't have power, if the government is not bringing the basic needs for the people, if they are failing in the way they are governing, if there is poverty in Syria, they would put the blame on a big ideological.
Okay, it looks like we have a technical problem here. Maybe we'll try to have Hadil on at a different time. I was very interested to hear what she had to say. I have to just explain here that they do have electricity in Syria. They have Syrian television, et cetera, et cetera. However, I believe what she means is that perhaps in different Arab villages further outside the main cities, there may be a case where they have not been connected up to the electrical grid. I'm not sure. I wish I had her on to be able to get the specifics on that, but we'll try to get her on again on the show. Really a pity that we lost her. And yeah, I'm going to try to get her on again and for longer as well. Okay, so I'm just looking to see how much time we have left in this segment while we're trying to get her back. And I want to say here again that I'm not sure, you know, when I was living in America, when I was a young girl, a lot of Americans are very isolated in the world. They're very self-centered. I don't want to say in a negative way, but they're less needy and dependent on other countries around them. If you go to Europe, you know, France is a smaller country, Spain, and all these countries, they border each other. There's a lot of interaction, but America, being on a continent, really doesn't have to interact as much. And people weren't really aware of the world map as they should have been. Many of the Americans thought that Sweden and Switzerland were the same country. So I want to give you just an idea of the map of the Middle East, just in case you're not that familiar. And you've got to the east, Iran. And Iran is an Islamic country today. It's made up of many different ethnicities and religions. However, the ruling regime there is Islamic Shiite. And they are a regional power today. They used to be more of a third world country at one time. Before that, in ancient times, they did have an empire. They were extremely powerful. And it's interesting to see these old empires wanting to rise up again. You see it with the Persian Empire, which is Iran today. You see it with Turkey, with the Ottoman Empire that was recently a power here in the Middle East. And that was the Ottoman Empire, as I was saying. And then the British came in World War I and took over. The French and the British fought, and they divvied up the Middle East between each other. That's why in Lebanon, which is north of Israel, trying to give you an idea of the map here, Israel's on the west coast of the Mediterranean and the Middle East. And then you've got, after, if we're going east, just try to picture in your head, you've got Israel, and you've got Jordan, and you've got Iraq, and then you've got Iran. Okay, that's going east. And then above Israel, you've got Lebanon, and a little bit northeast, you have Syria, and that's where our guest was from. And she had to flee. And let me just... the region here is very important also because this part of the Middle East here, where Israel is especially, connects three different continents together. We have with us to the north Europe, then you've got the Middle East and Asia to the east, and then you've got Africa to the south. And so it is a very important place, especially with trade, with also pipelines going through it and other access. So that's kind of like the Middle East. And Iran wants to be able to reach the Mediterranean. They want to be able to have pipelines going out to towards Europe. They want to have access to all of these other places to be closer to Europe, closer to Africa, closer, of course, to the Mediterranean Sea and its outlet. Okay, so anyway, we're going to break. I'm just trying to contact. I'm writing our guest here, explaining to her that there was a technical difficulty. I apologize to all of you listeners as well. It's really lousy when this happens, but that's what live radio is. I'm going to please try to get her back again, perhaps next week, so she can talk about it. But very interesting things coming up. We're going to be speaking later on in the show with Jerry Gordon, who's also going to give us an idea of what's going on here in the Middle East now with the Abraham Accords and with a possible change of administration in the United States of America and how that will affect everything here. We'll be right back. All right, you're listening to the Tamar Yonah Show here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com, and we're talking about the changing chessboard that we see here in the Middle East. We have gone through decades of wars with Islamic Arab countries here in Israel. By the way, did you know that as soon as, just as far back only as the 1970s, Israel and Iran were friendly? That's true. Under the Shah of Iran, he was much more friendly to the West, and Israel and Iran were not enemies like they are today. Iran was not calling for Israel's destruction under the Shah. It was only when their Khomeini came in, when they had their Islamic revolution, that everything in the Middle East changed. And they became a regional power now, and they are threatening the existence of many other Arab Islamic countries. And with Trump in the White House and his strength and the strength of Israel as well, Arab countries who before wouldn't even speak to Israel, let alone recognize us, is now looking to have peace with us. A very amazing thing that is happening, and so quickly. Here to tell us more about what's going on in the Middle East, we have joining us now Jerry Gordon. He is a producer and co-host of The Matrix at Israel News Talk Radio, which is at a hiatus right now. And he's also a senior editor of the New English Review. And you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter. Welcome to the show, Jerry Gordon.
Glad to be here.
It is wonderful to have you on. Thank you so much, especially at such quick notice. So I was explaining to our guests what the map of the Middle East looks like, because a lot of Americans really don't know the world map that well. They don't need to. America's a strong country, and they don't have to have as much to do with people as other countries do. And there's been a lot of change in this region. We've had different empires who have occupied many countries here, including the land of Israel. And what used to be third world countries like Iran today is a regional power. Israel, which didn't even exist, is a regional power today. And then you had a big change with Donald Trump getting into the White House and flexing American muscle. And with a lot of the Arab countries here seeing that Iran is a threat, they have seen that perhaps it's better to be friendly with Israel and America to preserve their own countries instead of not speaking with Israel anymore. So where would you like to start?
Well, let's start with something that we had actually addressed about a month and a half ago, and that's the fact that part of the reason the Sunni bloc, as we call it, particularly in the Gulf region and Saudi Arabia, have opted for normalization, as they call it, with Israel, has to do with the fact that Israel is now effectively the superpower. It is something that the U.S. depends on now that Trump has virtually left significant military dispositions and take them home, so to speak, to other areas of the world and to the U.S. So Israel is very important militarily. It is also very important strategically because it has been active in developing a network, an alliance, essentially, that consists of countries in what is called the East Med Bloc. That bloc comprises Italy, Israel, Cyprus, Greece, Egypt, Jordan, which is very interesting. And it's all because of the exploration and development of natural gas and other resources in the Eastern Med Levantine Basin, as it's called. And there's also something new that's occurring that your listeners may have just heard about, and that's the creation by, of all people, Google, through its fiber optic operations, building an undersea optical fiber network that goes through Israel to essentially the Sunni Emirates and Saudi Arabia and ultimately to India. And that will take probably a decade to further development on, but it will be significant in terms of allowing Israel to tap into communications on a global basis. But the other thing is that Erdogan has been a bad actor in the region, not only with respect to activities recently in Azerbaijan and the defeat of Armenia there, but also essentially in Syria with the Kurds. But also, Erdogan has a problem. His economy has floundered, and as much as he would like to become the neo-sultan in an empire that would stretch from its ancestral roots in Central Asia to the Mediterranean, he doesn't have the economic resources to achieve it. But what he has done is cause consternation in the Eastern Mediterranean region by undertaking gas exploration and, frankly, undertaking activities threatening Greece and its air force, and also threatening Israel.
So when you talk about the Eastern Mediterranean, describe what bordered countries you're talking about.
All right. If we take a look at the map of the Middle East, we're obviously going up the eastern Levantine coast. And that would include Egypt, Israel, Lebanon, Syria, because Syria has a warm water port that Russia occupies, as well as several airfields there in Syria. And then you've got the Turkish Mediterranean coast. And then in the Mediterranean, you have Cyprus and the rump northern Cyprus state that the Turks invaded in 1974, which has never been recognized by any nation other than Turkey. And it's that region that has been the intensive development of undersea natural resources. It led to the establishment of the so-called Triple Alliance that Bibi has executed with Greece and Cyprus. And it's also led the EU to fund a $22 billion undersea Eastern Med pipeline that would take the resources of the Leviathan field, which is huge, and the adjacent Cypriot Aphrodite field to Europe through a combination of Greece and Italy. It is one thing that the Trump people are probably interested in backing because they do not like Germany in particular, probably the most significant nation now in the EU, obtaining the benefit of the so-called Russian Nord Stream gas pipeline that comes down through the Baltic Sea. So it's a very interesting mix of interests. Certainly what the Russians want is geopolitical control over warm water ports. It goes back to the Tsarist days. That's why they're in TARDIS. And Russia has also recently extended that into the Red Sea with the lease of a port on the Red Sea in Sudan.
So I just want you to explain to our listeners, Jerry, what a warm port is so they understand.
A warm water port is basically a naval posting that allows a major power like Russia to maintain a geopolitical hold on alliances, such as the one they have with Assad in Syria. But the one that is projected to be developed in Sudan on the Red Sea is of interest because that allows Russia to base main battleships and cruisers there to enter into the Arabian Sea and into the Indian Ocean. And it means a connection potentially to South Asia.
Okay, so we're not only talking about access for navies to be able to reach places much faster, but also in Russia, which is a lot of it is frozen. It's hard to maneuver in frozen waters, getting your ships around, getting them out of even docks and things like that, right? So that's why they talk about warm water ports where year-round they can move their navy easily.
That's correct. But it also essentially threatens the U.S. presence in both the the Red Sea basin, so to speak, and the Arabian into Indian Ocean. Don't forget that the U.S. has a major base that, at least from the British, called Diego Garcia, which is a combination of a naval base as well as a place where B-52s were based.
All right. We only have another minute left, even less. But I want to ask you really quickly, just to tell our listeners, with the fall of the USSR, with the Soviet Union, and Russia becoming more capitalistic, enjoying Western life much more, incorporating Western life much more in its country, is there really that, you know, pieces around the chessboard have changed? You know, now the Arabs are wanting peace with Israel. Is Russia really that big of a threat to the United States like it used to be? And hostile?
No, it's not.
Right, okay.
And a lot of it has to deal with the fact that, I'll give your listeners one piece of data.
Okay, you're going to have to wait till after the break, Jerry. We got to go. The music's on. We'll be right back, everybody. Don't go anywhere. All right, we are back here at the Tamar Yonah Show on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com, and our guest is Jerry Gordon. He is the editor of the New English Review, and you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter, and he's here talking to us about the Mediterranean area and what has been changing here in the Middle East with the Abraham Accords and the interests of different regional powers. He even threw Russia into the mix in the last segment, and I just wanted to make clear that Russia and the hostilities between Russia and the United States aren't like they used to be. And that's when they talk about the Russian threat all the time. I'm thinking, I don't know about that. So follow up on that, please, for us, if you can, Jerry.
Well, and it has to do with Russia's economic status. Don't forget, Russia is primarily a natural resource economy. It's not terribly diversified. So when you talk about how significant the Russian economy is, it probably rivals that of simply the state of California, about 35 to 38 billion at last counting. The biggest problem Russia has is really being able to diversify the economy and also undertake renovations in its nuclear weapons systems and its ballistic missile systems as such. But it's very daunting unless oil is selling for easily $80 a barrel, and that's nowhere near that at the present time.
Okay, so with everything that's been happening, things are happening very quickly lately. We saw the Abraham Accords come out of almost nowhere. Trump may be leaving the White House. We haven't gotten a final official decision yet. But what would the Middle East look like under a Trump administration now with the Abraham Accords and other countries? They're talking about even now Saudi Arabia following through with peace with Israel. Or under a Biden administration, which would take us back to the Obama days?
Well, okay. The Trump administration has opened up with Israel as the military and high-tech superpower, essentially avenues of interest and economic relations, and even, frankly, some modifications in Islamic doctrine, as witnessed by what happened recently in the UAE. And as Israelis know, there's now fairly easy travel between Ben Gurion and, for example, Dubai on discount airlines, so it may become an alternative to going to Turkey. So basically, it has really changed the political alliance makeup of the Middle East. And it's not lost on the Emirates and the Saudis how effective Israel's covert war has been against Iran. We just saw the assassination of their so-called father of the nuclear program, meaning the weapons program, this past weekend, as well as the assassination of the number two last August, this past August, I should say, in Tehran. And that was the anniversary of the 1998 East African embassy attacks that al-Qaeda had done, ironically, with support from Sudan. But Sudan is also changing as well.
Okay. But again, now, Biden may be getting into power. If he does, it seems to me that he's going to be dragging everything right back to the Obama years, and we're going to see countries lose faith in American backing against Iran because they want to renew the deal with Iran. So tell us about the difference between a Biden administration and a Trump administration here in the Middle East.
Well, the Biden administration may possibly return to a modified version of the July 2015 deal that was really an abomination in the minds of many of us. I think it may be much more pragmatic. And I say that because the Jewish chap who's now the Secretary of State designee, Antony Blinken by name, may have a more pragmatic outlook. There was a piece I noticed yesterday by Marty Peretz, who was the long-term publisher of the New Republic, a publication that the very young Tony Blinken had been part of. And he views him as being a bit more pragmatic, for example, than was former Secretary of State John Kerry. Kerry basically has been holed up to be the czar for the climate change program. Right. So that keeps him away from the geopolitical stuff. But Blinken could be a lot more pragmatic and realistic about accepting the inheritance, if you will, pragmatically, of the Abraham Accords and what that means for the U.S. The idea of reopening relations with Tehran right now is really not in the cards, particularly after the most recent assassination. They have shown their vulnerabilities over the course of the month of November with the announcement of the al-Qaeda number two assassination that occurred in August, and now this past weekend, the father of the nuclear weapons program. That's a big loss for them.
Okay, and so what do you think is going to happen?
What I think is going to happen is that there'll be a tussle inside the Biden administration to attempt to return to the JCOP, as it was called, 2015. The reality is that's going to be rejected by the Iranians themselves. The Iranians, however, are in a box. They realize that if Israel has been successful, for example, in 2018 when they stole the Iranian archives out of a warehouse in South Tehran, and then this past month, the announcement about the al-Qaeda assassination and the last Friday's assassination of the head of the nuclear weapons program, they really are hurting. And they're doubly hurting because to the northwest of Iran, something that your listeners would be interested in, is Azerbaijan. and Azerbaijan has a strategic relationship with Israel. And it is not lost on a number of us that perhaps that may be a posting for certain covert activities inside Iran. The Azeris constitute something in the order of between 12 and 15 million of the population of Iran, which I think is about 80 million.
All right. And but again, how will all of this affect Israel?
Well, Israel is at a point in its development where it has a level of economic and technical superiority over what it had, for example, in the wake of the Sixth War, particularly the October War of 1973. Israel is not the same country. Israel's gross domestic product is on a world-class basis. Its technology prowess is admired. Its military capabilities, and particularly the prowess of its intelligence service and covert operations, have been surpassing expectations. So Israel now has a measure of independence. It wants to keep relationships, obviously, with the U.S., which have been longstanding. It does want to emphatically point out to the incoming Biden administration that what it has done in terms of opening up the Sunni presence in the discussions about what to do with the region is critically important. It did not exist when Obama left office.
Do you think that under a Biden administration, the Abraham Accords will still be working out, or do you think that it's going to be a rollback to the Obama days and back to two-state solution and the Arab countries losing their faith for protection from the United States from Iran if America really does go back to some type of Iranian deal?
I think it would be foolhardy on the part of the Biden administration to toss into the waste paper basket the Abraham Accords on becoming the new administration. And in particular, it would be foolish because it has to realize that this new Middle East that has broken out in the space of this past year basically recognizes the common threat posed by Iran's hegemony in the region. And it's also not lost on the Emirates and Saudi Arabia that the recent inspections of the IAEA indicates that Iran may have enough fissile material to perhaps make
be a real threat. Jerry, we have to leave it there because we're at the end of the show. Thank you so much for coming on and letting us know about the region. Thank you.